Well, it's now a week after Easter. Time enough to get back to the more mundane. Time enough, I think, to address the nitty-gritty of life. Hence today's title, After the Resurrection, The Laundry. Now, Easter is a story about life after death. That's basically it. And the end of that story is what so excites and elates our Christian friends. Their belief that God demanding and accepting the death of Jesus as a suitable sacrifice. Imagine a sacrifice to make up for all past, present, and future human sins, whatever those might be, so that humans never need to worry about being sent to hell, wherever that is. All this comes free with only one condition. One must promise to believe that Jesus was like the Greek gods, that is, both human and divine, and that they will be led by his example, and that they periodically repeat one ritual act of consuming his body and blood to cleanse their souls and proclaim their faith. Well, how about that? Many, perhaps most of us here, grew up hearing that or something very much like that. Parents and elders seemed to find it was easy, that it was okay, that we were little children then. We were sort of sure they were telling us the truth. They wouldn't lie to us about that. And besides, they knew lots of things we didn't. And they loved us. So it probably eventually would make sense. And as we grew up, we heard about death. We would die someday, but not for a long, long, long time. Children usually don't think a lot about death. And teenagers, for the most part, believe they're bulletproof. Death is only a word, and the fact is that for the most part, it's hidden from view in hospitals and rest homes and cemeteries. Occasionally, though, the child really does think about it. Pets and grandparents are put in graves, and they don't come out again, ever. But where did they go? It's natural to ask. And in this time, in this part of the world, they are often told about heaven and hell. But still, I think it's mostly up to one's imagination to conjure up the furniture of heaven and the temperature of hell. However, our imagines are well able to manage that task. And of course, these two words are all around, though often unclear. We hear confusing comments. As youngsters growing up, we hear phrases all the time.
For heaven's sakes, child.
Here's one from my mother. Heaven to Betsy. Isn't that curious? I don't know who Betsy was. Or, what the hell do you think you're doing? And the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And then for the political people, that candidate has the same chance of winning as a snowball in hell. And so there's a lot of comments about it, and a lot of confusion, too. Famous thinkers and writers talk about heaven and hell all the time. Bartlett quotes Paul Dunbar's ditty. There is a heaven forever, day by day, the upward longing of my soul doth tell me so. There is a hell. I'm quite as sure, for pray if there were not, where would my neighbor go? But it's difficult to accept much of what others have said or imagined, and so, like a lot of things in churches, it's up to the individual to conjure it up. And so now I ask you to find out your own images and your own words, and let's start with heaven. What would it be like for you? Maybe it, and by it I mean ultimate utopia, maybe it's sensual delights, fantastic food with no limit or weight gain, or great music perfectly performed, or fantastic sex, or great parties and friends, or an endless array of perfect golf courses, or constant creativity? What is your very own personal picture of heaven? What would you want to have happen after you die? Take a moment to think about that. All the good stuff, no taxes, no pain. Lots of smiles. Their heavens are good places. And now next, you probably saw this coming. Let's go the other way. Let's go to the worst place you can imagine, hell. What would that be like for you? Some suggestions: eternal pain, frustration, loneliness, boredom, nothingness. What is your very own private personal picture of hell? Think about that for a moment. Imagine it. Having a hymnal with songs in it. Easter is an ancient hope, and it's still alive today for hundreds of millions of Christians. The hope of a narrow escape from hell and successfully becoming a landed immigrant in heaven. But let's not worry about the particular description of what awaits one on the other side of life. What is to come isn't to be known. What is to be done here and now while we still have time is much more pertinent. What should one do to increase the odds of finding moments in heaven and not hell? The resurrection, the ecstasy, the hope of an imagined heaven may have happened long ago and far away, but after the ecstasy, the laundry awaits us here and now. It's in the present that we live and in the present that needs to be dealt with. What do we do with all the dirt we've gotten into? As our reading pointed out, after the ecstasy comes the laundry. And it might just as well have said, after the resurrection comes the washing of the sins. Because neither the enlightened ecstasy of a Buddhist guru nor the resurrection of a Jewish Jesus lasts. But the laundry keeps piling up. Our lives keep on going on and on with joys and sorrows. As Jack put it in our reading, times of great wisdom, deep compassion, and real knowing of freedom, these times alternate with times and periods of fear, confusion, neuroses, and struggle. Perhaps what I said about the Christian resurrection may sound harsh, but I don't say that to put down Christianity. These beliefs have served billions for millennia. They have provided a response to the most human concerns about death and about the guilt for doing bad things and not doing much good. People flock to Christian Easter services feeling that the church has somehow found a way to address these problems. We Unitarians, at least most of us, have our own notions of heaven and hell. At least I'm sure you have right now, as you're thinking about it. And we freely allow all others, all other beliefs, to have their ideas. In fact, many, if not most, of our beliefs are borrowed from a variety of religious sources to make a comparative hierarchy of Unitarian, Buddhist, and Christian, and other beliefs. So I speak using the Easter theology to point out a need that we all have, a need to ponder life's end and give it direction. I focus on this and say it for two reasons. First, the effect on my daily life and my beliefs and our daily life and our beliefs about the end things. We need to focus on that periodically. And second, to say that if Unitarianism is to become a full-time, full-surface service religion, it needs to address these human core questions, at least now and then. We could just keep coming to Unitarian churches and not ask the tough questions that most churches exist. The only reason that most of the Christians come to church is because they think the Christians have direct answers to these questions that trouble them. And yes, if you say that there is no way to answer the afterlife enigma, I'll agree. And if you say that it's like a creedal crisis that forever separates us from the rest of Western religion, I agree that that's true too. And if you say that there will never be a unity of response in even a small Unitarian congregation, again, I will agree. But there's always a but somewhere, isn't there? I do not ask that we come to a consensus, nor do I even hope that a creed will ever be part of our Unitarianism, because that would mean a loss of the individual freedom of thought and belief that we hold so dear and central. And I know that just wouldn't work for us. I've often heard that Unitarian congregations, they're likened to herds of cats, and the job of the Unitarian minister is to be the cat herder. If you've ever had more than one cat, you know that that's kind of a job. It seems to me that this is a fine example for Unitarians and our fellowships and our gatherings. And the metaphor, if you put 100 cats in a room with 100 different dishes of cat food, each dish would be sniffed and tasted and tested, and perhaps there would be groups of cats around one or more dishes, and some dishes maybe no interest at all to any cat. I expect that is a pretty fair example of Unitarian churches looking at the serious religious questions of whither am I bound and what is the best way for me to get there. We'll try this, and we'll try that, and we'll try the other. But by not addressing such questions in our churches, we, while faultlessly free to keep our heads in the sand, we will not meet the basic human need to look as far as we can into the enigma of death and to talk with one another within the blessings of our chosen faith. And we will not have much to say to the visitor who comes asking these questions, which are basic to most everyone's concept of what religion should offer. So it's you, as usual, it's up to you and me. It's up to us to speak about our moments of ecstasy, our resurrection, and also to speak about our laundry, my moments of heaven and my personal tiny fractions of the enlightenment do come, and so do yours. As Cornfield said, enlightenment or heaven does appear, sometimes not exactly as times of great wisdom, deep compassion, or real knowing of freedom, but in rather smaller doses, perhaps as times of relatively good wisdom, sort of strong compassion, and more or less knowing freedom. As to the dirt on my worn clothes, my laundry, I expect it's much like yours. The periods of fear, confusion, and struggle are certainly there for me. There is fear of disease, loss of loved ones, financial disasters. There are times of confusion to us and what I want to do with the rest of my life and how to get clarity. There are worries that my senior moments will increase and lengthen. worry about how the world will get along even perhaps how we imagine it might tragically end with overcrowded, polluted, out of energy, and full of wars. That's given. And yet, I'm optimistic most of the time. I'm optimistic because I have a solid belief that there is more to your and to my existence than those bits of hell, that there is a deep spiritual dimension. Like the spring crocus, it shoots through winter's detritus with a blaze of color and hope. In my experience, it has come in various ways. When I worked on a service, I'd often get to a place where I was stuck, a total loss for what to say next. But as it happened over and over again, I came to trust that something would come. So I let go of that fear of that ministerial writer's block, that I would have nothing to say on Sunday, and I would let go, and always some things came. The Christian would say, let go and let God. In a related way, when I'm writing a poem or coming to a problem that I am faced with and don't really know what to do next, I know that for a poem I can rhyme words, but the real inspiration comes out of the blue, as some call it. And I think most artists, whether they be musicians or dancers or whatever, will tell you the same thing, that their inspirations come. They don't know from where, but they come. A spiritual practice such as meditation, and there are dozens of kinds of meditation. Jean led us with a beautiful meditation, directing us through words and metaphor of trees. There's dozens of kinds of meditation, one for every one of the 45 cats that we have here now. Spiritual practice can often bring moments of grace, insights into our afterlife. I've mentioned some mystical times in my life to several of you at different times. They come and go. And for those who prefer to look for depth in other ways, you can look at dreams and dream analysis. There's another further source of wisdom and compassion. In short, I believe there are moments of a Unitarian kind of resurrection. They do exist. They come as individual sets of experiences, moments of wisdom, love, or freedom that make alive our belief and trust in some pervasive sense of something beyond us, a pervasive sense of the holy. And a church like Beacon is a good place to share events and stories and wonder about one's earthly depth, one's earthly death, and what to expect or imagine is next. Day-to-day living, doing the laundry, or at least can be, directly tied to one's enlightenment and personal resurrection. Well, that's what I have to say about Easter now, a week ago. That's what I have to offer new Unitarians who ask. Life and death are not separate. They're of a piece. Not unlike night and day. Hell and heaven, winter and spring, resurrection and laundry. I selected our reading because I believe it. I believe, as Jack Kornfield said, enlightenment does exist. It is possible to awaken. Unbounded freedom and joy, oneness with the divine, awakening into a state of timeless grace. These experiences are more common than you know and not far away. He did some amazing depth in meditation, ones that seem like almost impossible to do, like 4 hours of sitting and not moving or blinking, take a short rest and do it again for 4 hours and do that again for 4 hours for 2 or 3 days. You get to feel stuff that you've never felt before. It's there. You don't have to do it with that kind of a torture. You can do it gradually with building a meditation, an insight meditation, which is the Vipassana type. But even with that, and he's got so much inspiration, they don't last. Our realizations and awakenings show us the reality of the world, and they bring transformation, but they pass. So we look at a tree and we see the leaves coming out. It's a pretty wondrous creation, our world, and this thing we call human life. The story was so good about what would you choose and all of the choices. And you will see that we are well and truly blessed. This amazing planet, our blue boat home, that is such an amazing fact that we believe is a fact with our senses that we have. The blue boat home. If you'll stand now for our closing words and join hands, my all-time favorite reading. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. But take courage. For deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. Amen.